the month of Cheshvan, and as you know, the month of Cheshvan goes by the name Mar Cheshvan. And the real reason why it's Mar Cheshvan is a little less dramatic, is the word Mar refers to rain. Mar is a raindrop in the Navi Yeshayo, and Cheshvan is the month of rain, although we were zocha to have a little bit of rain even before Rosh Chodesh. But the Hasidish interpretation that's actually better known is that Cheshvan is the bitter month because it is the only month without Yomim Tovim. Now we have to test that proposition. That's not so simple. Kislev has Chanukah, Teves has the end of Chanukah, Shavat has Tu B'Shvat, so we're already stretching the idea of Yom Tov a little bit. Adar has Purim, Nisan has Pesach, Iyar. So if you're a Zionist, you have Yom Ha'atzmaut. But you have Lag BaOmer, and you also have Pesach Sheni, which is a tremendously important day, because Pesach Sheni is the message of the second chance. Even when we mess up, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a second chance. Sivan has Shavuos. Tammuz seems to be lacking something. It has the fast of the 17th of Tammuz, but would that be something happy? So the truth of the matter is there are two responses you can give to the idea of a fast being the holiday. Number one, even a fast day, a day of reflection, a day of sadness, is a day in which we have an opportunity to feel very close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We mourn the Chorban with Him. We engage in introspection. There's an extra spiritual dimension of that day that we don't have other days. Although perhaps it's not appropriate to say that some people like fast days, but I've heard it said that people even get a certain enjoyment, is perhaps not the right word, but a certain enjoyment in Tisha B'Av itself, because it's a time of reflection and a time of thought. Av has the 9th of Av, which is the fast day for the reason I just said. It's also the day Mashiach will be born, and of course it has the 15th of Av, which was the happiest day of the year along with Yom Kippur. That was a day of Shiduchim, a day of marriages. But then we have Elul. Elul actually doesn't have any Yomim Tovim at all. But since the period from Rosh Chodesh Elul to Yom Kippur are the 40 days where Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Har Sinai and Hashem accepted the tshuva of Am Yisrael, it is called Yemei Ratzon. Days of Grace, and because it's Yemei Ratzon, that gives it a festive character, but Nebuch, it is Cheshvan that is all alone, bereft of the Yomim Tovim. The Yomim Tovim are past, and we're not going to have something else for a while. Now, the MS is, Rav Tzadok of Lublin points out that in many ways, Cheshvan might be the most important month of the year, because Cheshvan is the real test whether Yomim Tovim have really changed us. Because right after all of these Yomim Tovim, which have such a diversity of mood, we are now back to what is called ordinary life. And the real test of any spiritual experience is, does it change the everyday way that we live? The Chazon Ish gave a wonderful mashal. The Chazon Ish says that when you see a pot on a fire and it's bubbling over, it boils over, that you cannot tell if it's half full or almost totally empty or totally full, because even a pot that is almost 100% empty will bubble over when it's on the fire. The real test of how much water is inside of it is whether it spills when it's off the fire. So the fact that a person is excited and filled with spirituality during a Yom Tov doesn't really mean they're full. They could actually be empty, but they're on the fire. When you're off the fire, that really is the test. So Cheshvan is extremely important, and Rav Tzadok, by illustration, quotes a passage from Sefer Yetzirah. Sefer Yetzirah is the earliest Kabbalistic book that we have. It is called the Book of Creation. Not only do we have the Sefer, we even have English translations of Sefer Yetzirah. You can actually buy it. According to some, the author of Sefer Yetzirah was Avraham Avinu. According to others, it was Adam HaRishon, even earlier. And essentially, what Sefer Yetzirah does is, it shows us, if you can understand it, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu used the spiritual powers of the Aleph Beis to create the universe. The universe was created through the kochos of the Aleph Beis. The Aleph Beis is the DNA of the spiritual universe that we have. And just like real DNA is a combination of these proteins that are given letters, all these sequences, so too, by various sequences of the Aleph Beis, right? People ask the question, Adam HaRishon gave names to all the animals. Well, why did he choose a certain name? Why was a lion called an Aryeh? Why was a cow called a Para? So Mark Twain, who kind of had a biting, sarcastic wit, actually wrote an essay about this. And Mark Twain says the answer is obvious. Adam named the lion because it looked just like a lion. So of course that's what you call it. That's Mark Twain's answer. But the truth of the matter is, Mark Twain's answer is actually right. Because the Hebrew Aryeh, we don't understand what this means exactly, but the powers and the spiritual forces that arise from the combination of Aleph, Resh, Yud, He is the Metzias that gives rise to the lion. And Adam HaRishon was able to peer, like X-ray or a CAT scan or an MRI, spiritual MRI, to see the spiritual structure of every form of life, and could work backwards, like scientists call it reverse engineering, to work backwards and determine what was the combination of letters that gave rise to this spiritual reality. That is Sefer Yetzirah. And, strangely enough, the Gemara remarkably tells us that there were chachamim that could utilize these powers and actually create, not totally living things, but semi-living things. For example, it mentions that there were rabbis of the Talmud that every Friday afternoon, you can save on meat prices, they would use the formulas of Sefer Yetzirah, and they would create an animal that they would shecht and eat on Shabbos. The idea of the golem, creating a golem, is through these various forms of letters. Now, the issue of the golem, the best just as a total aside, the most common, or the most famous golem of history. There aren't that many golems around, but at least artificial golems. But the best known golem is the one that is attributed to the Maharal of Prague, who is said to have created a golem that defended the Jewish people in various ways. And according to legend, at least, we don't really know, in the attic of the Maharal's Beis Knesset in Prague, it's a locked attic, and it is said that behind the lock and chain, there is the dormant form that can wreak havoc. And there are various stories that some Nazis went up there in World War II, etc., and they got destroyed or they got frightened to death or whatever it is. I just want to point out that the whole issue of whether the Maharal made a golem is very, very questionable. The Maharal died in the 16th century. The Maharal died in the 1500s. The very first mention of a golem tradition is towards the end of the 19th century, more than 300 years after the Maharal's death. It was mentioned in a book written by Rav Yudel Rosenberg, who was a Talmud Chacham, but he was also known as a forger of a number of things. I mean, there are a number of other areas. It's hard to understand this exactly, but he was a professional forger of a number of things. And many historians and many Talmidei Chachamim feel that he literally made up the story, because for 300 years nobody was aware of the Maharal's golem. It was not mentioned in any contemporary account. But here is the thing. Whether or not the Maharal made a golem, there is no question, I believe, that he could have made a golem, meaning to say tzaddikim do have this koach. It is recorded that when the Vilna Gaon was not even bar mitzvah, he had already mastered Kabbalah, and he was in the process of making a golem, but his father told him not to get involved in that stuff. So he didn't make a golem because Kibbud Aviyim said he shouldn't do those things. I talk about chemistry sets and the like. Okay. Now, the reason I'm bringing all this up as a Hakdamah to Cheshvan is that in the Sefer Yetzirah, which is the spiritual powers of the Aleph Beis, every single month is allocated a letter. Obviously, not every letter in the Aleph Beis has a month, but there's only 12 months, but every month has a letter. And that letter is combined with a human sensory function, either sight, hearing, taste, and the like, and there are different combinations. So for the month of Cheshvan, here is our combination. Sefer Yetzirah says, Himlich Os Nun, God made the letter Nun ascendant, Veshitev Bereach, and he combined it with fragrance, with smell, the olfactory sense. So the Shidduch of Cheshvan, every month has a Shidduch, so to speak. The Shidduch of Cheshvan is the letter Nun and the Chush HaReach. Now that's all Sefer Yetzirah says. It doesn't explain it. And one of the things Rav Tzadok does in the Pre Tzadok is every month he takes this passage from Sefer Yetzirah and he tries to explain how it is connected to that particular month. In fact, they've even printed it separately. They, from the Pre Tzadok, which is written really on the Chumash, they extracted Rav Tzadok's essays on Rosh Chodesh and they printed a separate Sefer of Rav Tzadok on Rosh Chodeshim, in which primarily he utilizes Sefer Yetzirah as his springboard. And Rav Tzadok explains it in the following way. What's the shaychus? What's the connection between the letter Nun and Cheshvan? So he says, he quotes the Gemara in Brachos, a very famous Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara in Brachos says, in the name of Rav Yochanan, how come there is no pasuk in Ashrei that begins with the letter Nun, right? Ashrei, every pasuk in Ashrei, or Tehillah LeDavid, really, it's Mizmor. Actually, it's interesting. Ashrei is not part of Ashrei, meaning to say, Tehillah LeDavid is Kapitel 145, Kuf Mem Hei. Ashrei Yoshvei Veisach is the end of an earlier Tehillim. So technically, Tehillah LeDavid, and it begins with our Ramimcha. So every pasuk in Ashrei begins with the letter of the Aleph Beis, but when we come to Mem, we have Malchuscha, Malchus Kalolamim. And then the next one is Somech Hashem L'chal HaNoflim. We go from Mem to Samech, we skip Nun. So Frecht Rav Yochanan, why is there no Nun beginning in a verse in Ashrei? So Rav Yochanan says, because Nun carries the message of Nefila, falling, defeat, losing ground. David HaMelech did not want to begin a Pasuk with the concept of Nefila. We have a Pasuk in Amos. Actually, it's one of the Haftorahs. Later, in which Amos talks about the tremendous Chorban that will befall Am Yisrael in Golos, and he says, Nafla, she shall fall, Lo Yisaisif Kum, and will not even be able to get up again, Besulat Yisrael, the Virgin of Israel. David HaMelech did not want to begin with Nefila. The only thing is, in the next verse that talks about Hashem picking you up, Somech Hashem L'chol HaNoflim. So he gets the Nun in there, but only in connection with Hashem supporting you. He doesn't want to begin with Nefila. By the way, just to show you that you can always look at things in an optimistic way, the Gemara in Brachos adds parenthetically that the pasuk that the Gemara quotes, that Nun is Nefila, Nafla, she shall fall and will not be able to rise, was punctuated differently in Eretz Yisrael, where they looked at the bright side. And it depends where you put the comma. Instead of reading it, Nafla, she has fallen, Lo Sosif Kum, she can't get up again, put the comma this way, Nafla Lo Sosif, she will no longer fall, Kum, get up. Right, so everything, it's good. Now just so we look at the bright side of things, we have to, and this is what the Gemara says. I do know, I'll tell you, punctuation is important. I'm aware of at least one legal case involving an insurance policy, where it was a question of $5 million, and it literally turned upon the proper placement of a comma. So things make a difference. And because in Tanakh we don't have intrinsically, well, we have esnachtas, we have tamei hanagina that can sometimes indicate, very often, but not always. It's not 100% a test. But be it as it may, the Gemara says that Nun is the os of Nefila. Yeah.
Yeah. The question I have is the connection between Nun and olfactory sense.
I'm going to get to Cheshvan as well. Okay. So, your first question is a very excellent question, because the problem basically is that everything, there are bad words and there are good words. This is the same problem with the Rosh Hashanah Simanim, right? We say, don't eat nuts on Rosh Hashanah, because the gematria of egos is the same as chait. Now, first of all, it's not even the same. It's one off. Now, the truth of the matter is, tov is an exact gematria of egos, 17. You know, so if anything, egos is closer to tov than it is to chait, and yet we try to avoid anything that even has the bad connotation. But that's a good question. The second question I'll talk about now. Okay, now Rav Tzadok says, if nun is connected to nefila, we know why it's connected to cheshvan, because of all of the months of the year, Cheshvan is where we suffer the biggest fall, because we go from so much Kedusha, but what do you do with it afterwards? Now, granted, I do understand we are human beings, and there might be a certain relief in a physical sense of not having to do all the work around Yom Tov, but spiritually, there's a tremendous chalal, a tremendous void. It always struck me, the truth is, in yeshiva, I think the void begins even a little earlier, because, you know, you have Yom Kippur, and right after Yom Kippur is Beinas Manim. Yeshiva's over. I remember this as a young boy, you know, in Eretz Yisrael. It was like kind of unbelievable. How can you just, you know, stop everything? You go cold turkey. I mean, you've been learning Elul and Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. Then it's over. Time for vacation. It was very strange. Baruch Hashem, you had Sukkot that brought you back a little bit. But once you enter the month, and even after Sukkot, the week after Sukkot, you're still taking down the sukkah. Some people are still taking down the sukkah, whatever it would be. But once you hit Cheshvan, it's the fila. A person gets depressed. A person has a void. A person doesn't know what to do, where to direct my kochos, what to focus on. Life is just ordinary life. That's nefila. Nun is the king of Cheshvan, so to speak. But Rav Tzadok says, what is the Hatzalah from the Nun? Reyach. What is Reyach? Reyach is the thing that lingers even when the physical mamushis is gone. Right? So imagine you had a wonderful roasted chicken, whatever it is. So even when the chicken is gone, the smell lingers. And from the smell, you can recapture the memory and the experience of the chicken. Those of you that are French literature aficionados may recall Marcel Proust's Remembrance of Things Past, where this 3,000-page novel, or whatever it is, got triggered by someone smelling something that reminded him of something. But Chazal also say, that there is something very spiritual about the olfactory sense. The term that Chazal used for reyach is that it's davor shahaneshama nanispa. It is something that gives the neshama pleasure. And in fact, think about it, the same way the neshama came in through the nose,
it goes out,
and the reyach goes in, right? So there is some spiritual connection there. So Memela Rav Tzadok is saying, Cheshvan doesn't have any chagim, but Cheshvan still has this reyach. Now again, it's not a physical smell, obviously, but there is something that lingers in the air that allows you to capture and link to the kedusha of the chag. And that's what Sefer Yetzirah says. Even though the dominant koach of Cheshvan is nun, which is negative in a way, nefila, but the nun is tempered by reyach. And reyach allows us, spiritual reyach, allows us to connect to the kedusha of the chag. Right. That's right.
So that was given the highest
level. That was given to the highest level. That's right. That's right.
And so this sense, the ray effect, is closest to the neshama.
Mm-hmm.
That is,
because it is the least. It is the least physical.
It's the least physical.
In fact, it's yadua. You know, the Rambam writes, although he actually got it from Aristotle, but the Rambam writes that the sense of touch is the least spiritual, because it is the most physical. Sight and hearing and smell all do not involve physical contact with something. The Rambam was Megana the Chush HaMishush, because he considered it to be too grossly physical, etc. But again, I have Aristotle had made the point earlier. Yeah.
We were reading in the that Hashem smelled the
yes,
carbon.
Yes.
And of course, I asked my husband what.
Right.
So it's more allegorical, whatever.
Yeah.
But here you're giving a very good reason, because that is something spiritual.
Right. I think that ties in. That ties in very, very nicely. That when Hashem gets satisfaction from what we do, we can talk about God smelling a pleasant fragrance, a reyach nichalach. Right, right. Very good. Yeah.
Does this also connect to simply breathing? Because it's even shown, and that also is connected to neshama. So
that's
is
right.
There also a connection between reyach and the function of breathing?
No question. Yeah, that's right. Reyach, ruach, that's correct. They are connected. And the reason it's called the neshama nanispo is because it goes through the same process as neshima, as breath in and of itself.
Okay, then this is a segue to our topic. Is it possible to call from our sources a powerful enough message to not smoke, because we're violating these most spiritual senses and most important functions?
Well, I can give simpler reasons why you shouldn't smoke, but I think I think so. You know the
young man to have sources.
Well, perhaps too, one could develop the notion of not impairing the sense of reyach. In fact, there are spiritual healers who are not charlatans, people who are mekubalim, people who are talmidei chachamim, but they also help people with alternative medicine. Yeah, aromatherapy. And they actually use, now this raises interesting halakhic questions, they actually have packages of the same ingredients that the Keturis of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, halakhically, there's some issues here. Because one of the lavin, one of the 365 negative commandments in the Torah is, you're not allowed to duplicate the Keturis, but the halakha is, that's only if you do it in the same quantities and proportions. There is a halacha that way. So you'll see, they have a letter from a posek saying, this is not the proportions, etc. Because to make exact keturis would actually be forbidden. It's a chiyuv karis. It's a very severe, very severe aver. So this is the idea of cheshvin. So hopefully it'll give us at least theoretical little chizuk. There's a story they tell about a Russian peasant in a Hasidic community. And he was very impressed with how levedic the community was. They constantly had parties, and so he thought becoming a Jew is a lot of fun. So somehow he became a Jew. I don't know where he did his geiris and the like. And he became a Jew at a very opportune time. He became a Jew around Tu Bishvat. So that was great. Great party for Tu Bishvat. And then you have Rosh Chodesh Adar, Rosh Chodesh. Then you have Purim. Then you have Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Then you have Pesach. And of course, Shabbos is in between. So everything was great. So he tells his friend Ivan, he says, you got to join this religion. This is the greatest thing. So Ivan didn't get around to it till after Pesach. So immediately he gets hit with Sfiras HaOmer. All right, Shavuos was a little break in the middle. But then the 3 weeks and then the 9 days, and, no meat and no wine and no weddings and no music. And the Hasidim didn't even have the parties they normally have because it's a somber time. So he's going crazy, every day there's a new deprivation that he discovers. So he goes over to his friend and he says, what's going on here? You promised me that we'd have these great parties and drinking things, and all I have is restriction after restriction. So the first guy scratches his head and says, I really don't know. Ever since you joined, we've been going downhill. So, but the truth of the matter is, Jewish life has rhythms because life has rhythms. And there are times, as Kohelis says, times of crying and times of rejoicing. And one has to learn how to serve Hashem in every situation, to be grateful and happy with the blessings of life, but also to take the messages of the tragedies and adversities of life as well. And Rav Huttner once made a very profound remark. Rav Huttner made a profound remark that the person who does not rejoice on Simchas Torah cannot really cry on Tisha B'Av, and vice versa. Because it's all the same thing. We cry on Tisha B'Av because we're in pain over the distance we have from God. But if a relationship with God is not so important to us, I'm not going to cry. So Simchas Torah, where I celebrate my closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will be the reason why I'll cry on Tisha B'Av when I sense the distance. If the joy of closeness isn't a big deal, then the absence is not a big deal either. So it's all connected. So one can look at the year, at Tishrei, as front-loading all of the different emotions a human being experiences and giving you mechanisms to sanctify it and direct it to Avodas Hashem. The joy, the sadness, the introspection, the sense of community. And then Hashem is saying, I've shown you to take each of these experiences, which you're going to have during the year, and you'll have some template to deal with them. Yeah. I'm sorry, with the Giyot, yeah. Yes.
A firm, a really...
Right.
She said the difference in the year since she's become Jewish is remarkable. She said before that they had 2 or 3 chagim in the fall and in the spring.
Right.
In the winter, and that was it. She says the year is so, our year is so full.
Full, it, that's right.
There's something all the time. It goes by really fast. Actually.
Of course... The biggest, I'm going to move to our topic today, but I just want to say that the biggest, the holiest day of the year, by the way, is actually Shabbos. And I want to tell you this, because most people say, and of course there's a good argument for it, most people say Yom Kippur is the holiest day of the year, and that's because they focus on the phrase Shabbos Shabbason, the Shabbos of Shabboses. But I can give you 2 proofs that Shabbos is actually holier than Yom Kippur. Proof number one is the number of aliyos that are called up to the Torah. On a Monday and Thursday, 3 aliyos. Rosh Chodesh, 4 aliyos. Chol HaMoed, 4 aliyos. Yom Tov, even Rosh Hashanah, I'm not counting Maftir, is 5 aliyos. Yom Kippur, when it's not on Shabbos, like this year, is 6 aliyos. Shabbos is 7 aliyos. So that itself is an indicator. Second proof is the punishment the Torah says. If you do malacha on Yom Kippur, which of course is forbidden, there's a chiyuv karis, that's like death in the hands of heaven, but a beis din cannot execute you. If you do malacha on Shabbos, there is even a penalty, bidei adam, which normally means more chomer. So the question becomes, if Shabbos is holier, so what do we mean by the phrase Shabbos of Shabbos? So the interpretation is this. It's not a reference to holiness, but rather shivisa means refraining from things. On Shabbos, we refrain from work. On Yom Kippur, not only do we refrain from work, we also refrain from eating and drinking. So Shabbos Shabbason is not a reference to Kedusha. It is a reference to an expanded shivisa. Now, Yom Kippur obviously has things that Shabbos doesn't have. Yom Kippur has a koach of kapora. In other words, Yom Kippur has something that is very unique. No question. But the gift of Shabbos transcends everything. That's an important thing to remember. So Cheshvan is not bereft of holy days. First of all, every day is holy, but it has Shabbos Kodesh, which is something to remember as well, that we're never more than 6 days away from the experience of the holiest. And in fact, it's brought down that just as you see that the more something is necessary for life, the more accessible it is, right? There's more water in the world than there is a steak, right? Because you need water to survive. So too, you have more Shabboses in the world because Shabbos is necessary. Shabbos is like the oxygen, like the air, like the water, and therefore it's more matsui than even the Yomim Tovim and the like. Yeah.
Is there a special simcha on Cheshvan because of the rain the first time?
I think so. I think that's very good. You know, I remember years ago when I was in Eretz Yisrael for a year around V'dor Samech, around 12 years ago. So unfortunately, and we have this every once in a while, you know, very long periods without rain. And this was the middle of Kislev and there was no rain. Almost Hanukkah time. No rain. Last year too, but this was, yeah. And then in the middle there was a big storm and people were getting drenched, but people were like dancing in the streets. It was very, very, very interesting that in America we would just go, oh, it's raining again, you know, and this and that. And if you read the Chazal about rain, you read the Mamore Chazal about rain, you see it described with such ecstasy. It is like the Chiyas HaMesim. It is greater than the building of the Beis HaMikdash. It is greater than Mashiach. Mamish words that you might have thought were hyperbole. But Chazal were describing a phenomenon that Eretz Yisrael, the Torah itself says, right? The Torah itself makes the point, unlike Egypt, you know, which has this big Nile that can always take care of everything, Eretz Yisrael is totally at the mercy of Matar HaShemayim, as if to say we have to look up to Hashem like the man, right? Every day you needed Hashem. We need the rain. Hashem created Eretz Yisrael this way so that we know how totally we are in Hashem. So in that way, when it rains, Baruch Hashem, it is a great simcha. You know, it's interesting that, you know, although we already started saying Masha Furuach Merid HaGashem right after An Shmini Atzeres itself, but we don't ask for rain. We don't ask for rain in the Amidah, V'sein Talu Mator, till Zion Cheshvan. And the Gemara gives a reason, although the reason doesn't apply so much today, but it's the reason that's given, because the last pilgrims, it took them 2 weeks to get home after Sukkot, and therefore we don't want to pray for rain while people are still trekking on the roads. Now, as you know, in other countries, they don't start saying V'sein Talu Mator till, and this is the only halacha that is based on an English date, till around December 4th or 5th, based on equinoxes and the like. There's a whole complicated issue. So Rashiv Orsamech Rav Schiller said that he likes to go fundraising between Zion Cheshvan and December 4th, because this is the time when Eretz Yisrael is asking Hashem for a special bracha that Chutz La'aretz isn't asking for yet. And therefore he feels that he'll have more mazel taking bracha from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael in that particular period of time. Okay. So anyway, this is kind of a bit of hakdama, a little off topic, so to speak, but I thought it would be useful as we begin Cheshvan that we shouldn't have nefila, we should try to remember the reyach. So